Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
This week on the show, we are covering the, brief run of the Jumping Bomb Angels. It is, but at the same time, their Wikipedia is maybe one of the most scarce Wikipedias I've ever seen for a prominent wrestling act.
That's fair. I mean, we don't get a lot. It's mostly because they were mainly wrestling in the in Japan. I mean, they were only in the U.S. for like a year.
And they're on Wikipedia. So it says they wrestled from 1981 to 1991 together. However, all of our matches come from between 86 and 88. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, they're most that's when they were at their peak, you know, and it's also a matter of a lot of it wasn't really, filmed and, easily distributed out. So we are just kind of confined to that time period because of that.
We normally take a look at a wrestler's career through five of their most important matches. And sometimes there are, of course, restrictions on that. The older we go, the harder it is to find accessible videos because we want to make sure that you can all go see the clips as well. Sometimes we are restrained to watching things on Peacock, and that's a bummer. But, you know, this week, everything is going to be available on fullpresswrestling.com as we cover the Jumping Bomb Angels, a team that I had heard of because they came to WWF and were miles ahead of literally anything else that the women's division had.
I know them literally because the women's tag titles were retired because of them.
Yes, they did lose them again, and then they got retired after because they just had nothing left to do in the women's tag division at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you know about the Jumping Bomb Angels?
I know that everything I had just mentioned. Everything I just mentioned is all I know. I know nothing about these women, admittedly, and it's bad. Well, okay. I know more about them now, but I'm obviously referring to what I knew prior to us preparing for this episode.
Fair enough. I had heard the name. I did not know the names of the two women who were part of the team. So Norio Tateno and Itsuki Yamazaki. I did not know them by name. You don't really see a lot of other things on their Wikipedia. So for example, Tateno, she starts in All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling. There's a middle section about the Jumping Bomb Angels and their jump to WWF. And then there's just a one line saying from 1992 until her retirement in 2010, Tateno competed in Ladies Legend Pro Wrestling. That's it. Just for, what is that, 28 years or 18 years? 18 years. She's just like, yeah, no, she just worked in this one company. That's
cool. Yeah, she just, you know, she vibed.
Yeah. Yamazaki retired in 1991. That's the reason that they split up. And made her return by making a special appearance for Ladies Legend Pro Wrestling in 2008. Yeah. Apparently, Yamazaki lives, according to Wikipedia at least, in Bergen County, New Jersey.
That is so incredibly random.
Yes, we love random fun facts. Also, speaking of random, hey, help the podcast out. Rate 5 stars. If you're following us on YouTube, hit subscribe. Go in the comments. Whether it's the comments or one of those 5-star ratings, be sure to put in your wrestling hot take. We would love to talk about your wrestling hot takes on air. It would be super fun. Javier, give me the first wrestling hot take you can think of right now.
John Cena is the greatest of all time.
Ooh. I'm not surprised that you said it, but there will be people who disagree, and I find that fun.
And I'm okay with that, because they're wrong.
That's fair. My hot take isn't really a hot take, but it is, I think, just it's a fact. You could kill somebody in a hardcore match. There's no rules against it. You could.
It's not even a take.
It's not. You could. Why has no one started a match with a gun? I don't know. Like that. Maybe that's the take.
Well, maybe. That was the whole thing with Brian Pillman. Is he?
Yes. Very excited for Brian Pillman Jr. to debut. That one vignette. Lexus King. The one vignette sold me in the name. I was against it. The vignette sold it. I'm in.
I don't like the facial hair / like the part of his hairline that's like shaved down to like a buzz. I don't like that combo and how dark it is compared to the blonde curly hair.
It does look slightly AI generated, like he ChatGPT'd his forehead, but
it looks exactly like what Disney wants to happen to actors.
It's It's a very topical reference. I like that. All right, our first match for the Jumping Bomb Angels, January 5th, 1986, All Japan Women's Wrestling. It is the WWWA World Tag Team Championships, the Jumping Bomb Angels versus Bull Nakano and Kondor Saito.
What a name, right?
What a pair of names. We obviously have covered Bull Nakano on this podcast before, but Kondor Saito, hell yeah.
I was like in on that. And then I saw them and I was like, oh my God, Bull Nakano does not look like Bull Nakano.
Right. She hasn't really she's not fully formed into Bull Nakano yet, at least the one that we would get to know.
She's
and
very young here.
Very young. Also, for those who aren't familiar with All Japan Women's Wrestling, the thing that I think you need to know is this was done in the 80s. You know, it started before then, but like in the 80s and the 90s, All Japan Women's Wrestling was doing women's wrestling better than the West would do until 2014.
Until literally today. No, you just watch some of these matches and you're like, holy crap. Like, could we even get something like this in either one of the two major American companies, much less like Japan?
I think we have the talent to do it, but would they have the time to be able to tell the story? That is the real question.
It's true. Get people to care?
Yes, I do think they could. I think that women's wrestling right now has some amazing character workers who have the ability to get people invested. Again, yes. It is a matter of time, right? Like, I think you could pluck four women from either of AEW or WWE and give them 20 minutes, and you could have matches like we see this week. But would they?
No. Tony Khan especially, no.
And that's the problem. All right, so let's talk about what was a really good match. I really like this match in particular. It's not my recommendation this week.
Yeah.
But I do really like this one.
It's not my recommendation either. But I think just the fact that we see a sort of a level of brutality that you don't normally see in women's wrestling, as much less women's wrestling probably in 1986, that I was really intrigued. Like, Bull Nakano, I mean, we've covered her a bunch of times in, you know, the Mandami Toyota episode. She was in Aja Khan's episode as well. But, like, did we a Bull Nakano episode?
I believe we've done a Bull Nakano episode, yes. Oh. I will double check that, but I'm pretty sure we have.
But, because I don't remember if, I know we've done Aja Kong, I think, but I don't remember if we did Bull. Anyways, just, you know, seeing her here and, like, seeing the way that her and Kondor Saito just, like, literally just kind of manhandled these two. I think we covered once a Bull Nakano Aja Kong tag team match. And I think that is literally the only example that we've had on this podcast of like a level of brutality amongst women's tag teams.
We covered Bull Nakano about 1 year ago today.
Oh, good for us.
Yeah. Also, we're recording this on Friday the 13th. Ooh. Are you suspicious at all? Are you superstitious?
Like, in what way?
Like, are you like a knock on wood person?
Like, I'll do it as like a, you know.
Like a funny aside, like, haha.
Do
like,
the act, but I'm not like, I'm not doing it believing that this is going to influence anything.
Are you like, I have to sit at this spot on the couch during the game or else my team will lose? Are you
like, now that I'm very sports superstitious. Like, really? If I notice a pattern of literally anything, like, especially for the Vikings, I've noticed that if I don't watch the Minnesota Vikings, they lose. So I have been avoiding the Vikings like the plague. Like, literally, so every Sunday I watch Red Zone over actual
of course
games because I'm an adult. And so, like, whenever I see the Vikings come on, I literally turn my head so I can't watch it.
That's
like, I'll pull up my phone and start using my phone. Like, if I give it no interaction, then they suck. And I want them to suck because I want Caleb Williams.
You want Caleb Williams. Yeah, that's fair. I wouldn't say that I'm very superstitious. In terms of sports, I still remember there was one playoff run for the Maple Leafs where we realized the common denominator between wins and losses was my stepdad being in the room. And so we banned him from our like basement living room. We're like, you cannot watch the games down here with us. Like, you can watch it upstairs. Like, that doesn't affect it. But you can't be in the room here. And this is the year that we lost in overtime to Philadelphia Flyers. He came down for overtime just to check in on how the game was going, and we fucking lost. And we were furious. And then the Leafs didn't make the playoffs for the rest of the time I was a teenager. Anyways, that was when I was 12 years old. They didn't make the playoffs.
This isn't as bad as the one Dodgers fan who, like, bought a new TV because they had lost in every other TV in the house.
That's funny. That's very funny. If you're wondering, if you do watch this match and how to, because, you know, the commentary is in Japanese. And unless you speak Japanese, you're probably going to be very lost based on who is who. Tateno has the short haircut is the easy way to identify them.
Yeah, just this match, though.
Yes, but then there are slight differences. In, like obviously, they look different. But
yeah,
in but the 1980s like, quality. So
grainy.
Yeah.
There I can are barely ways know who's who.
Yeah. Lots of really good spots in this match. I don't want to go through bit by bit, but like, tell me some things you really liked.
I can go through bit by bit. Yamazaki starts rocking Saito early on. Bonacana comes through. She is just a force immediately. The only way the Yamazaki is able to get the advantage back is she hits like five drop kicks in a row. I swear to God. Tateno comes in and she immediately hits some big running knees, which has become becomes like a trend for her.
One of her favorite things to do.
And they look good, like almost they every do. Time too.
They do.
At one point she does, or Yamazaki's in, there's a lot of tags in and out between the jumping bomb angels. It's rapid. A trend in every single one of these matches. She does like an ugly looking, ugly meaning that it looks brutal. Like leg lock takedown. Then she does like a Muda lock, and she does a thing where she like does a back bump repeatedly to add more torque to it. Tateno comes in, Bonacano starts working her in a furious way, like just brutal clubs and full on Bonacano-ness. And then we really start to see like just kind of how electric the jumping bomb angels are. Like Yamazaki especially, she's a
firecracker. It's the word I'm gonna use.
Hot moves, like electric, exciting moves, like no woman I've seen in a while. Like, she's just also really fun.
Important to note, this is a 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yes, most of these are.
Because we are gonna get to our first fall. The angels hit a beautiful double back suplex to Nakano. Yamazaki gets a soup slam. Tateno with a knee drop from the top rope, a pile driver to Saito, and they get the first fall. So the faces actually go up in this, which is very cool. We also get, in the clip you found for us, Japanese commercials in the middle.
Which are cool.
There's so much. Again, I don't speak Japanese. I have no idea what they were talking about. I love them all. There's an aspirin one of some sort. There is one that involves a lot of aggressive handshaking. That was cool. There's one for soup. There's one that I guarantee is for perfume because there's, you can just tell when a perfume commercial's starting because something weird's happening and everything's very abstract, but it's because they're trying to sell you without you being able to smell it. That's why perfume commercials are so fucking weird because they're trying to get across a scent through other.
Okay, but then like explain the weird ones that are like in black and white and like some shirtless dude with six pack, like just like. Posing as an ominous, like, sensual voice.
Because
like
we're
this.
Trying to get you to see, like, based on what you see and hear, you are then going to associate, like, that's likely what it smells like. It's
oh, it smells like old sex? I don't know what that means. Like, what is conveyed when I see a shirtless male model with a six pack? It's black and white. And they're talking like this, like it's a smooth jazz station, baby.
The last commercial is cyclists cycling in space, and it looks like Tron, and I really like it.
Did you rewind to look at it again?
I paused it, I slowed it down, and I was like, oh, this is cool. What are you doing?
Evan was just looking at it like...
Yeah, you know when you show a little kid something on your phone, and they just like go all the way up to the screen? Yeah, that's what I was doing. Fall 2, Saito and Yamazaki start. We get a doomsday device to Nakano, but instead of being a clothesline, it's a missile dropkick, and it was fucking
which is so sick. Why is that not a move, by the way?
Then, and I this is how I knew we did a Bull Nakano episode for sure, because I remember consistently seeing her use nunchucks, and she has nunchucks in the ring.
And my whole thought process throughout this time, because the referee is just looking at her,
yep,
is... Is this not a disqualification?
The answer is no. They don't give a flying fuck.
She absolutely rocks Tatano with nunchucks. She does a flying clothesline with nunchucks, and that's what evens it up. She gets the even, like the fall to tie it up in like a minute.
Yeah. Then Tatano gets her head stuck between the ropes, and so does Yamazaki by the heels. Tatano gets worked over by Nakano. Tag happens, but the ref doesn't see it, and like, but then Yamazaki doesn't care and starts attacking anyway, so he has to pull Yamazaki off of the heels. Yamazaki then gets hit with a bottle. Saito has a bottle for some reason, like a glass bottle.
I did not notice that.
You didn't notice that? That's what she has in her hand when she's like doing the attack. She has a, like, it's not a broken bottle or anything, but it's just like a, you know.
She had nunchucks too?
A bottle you'd have like a ship in. Like, that's what she has. One of those bottles.
Just with the two sticks going in there, like.
What old guy hobby are you going to take up?
Ooh.
Like, there's like
fishing. Model. Does that count?
You're gonna be a fishing guy. You have the patience. I like fishing.
I loved fishing when I was a kid. Okay. I'm a big hike. I like hiking, but that's not really an old guy thing. You don't want to walk. I'm gonna be that old guy that like puts his hands behind his back. You know what I mean? Like when they walk.
I fucking stand like that already.
Walk. They put their hands behind their back, and I'm like, I'm just gonna like walk around.
I already do that. My old guy hobby is going to be reading super thick books about like World War II.
Oh, I mean, like, I already do that.
Okay, so we both already have at least one old guy
but,
hobby.
But like, I have my Kindle. Like, well, I don't get like the super thick, but like, I have a Kindle. You know what I mean?
So you're a Gen Z old guy. That's great. We're brawling around the outside. There's chair shot by Yamazaki. Chair shots one of them. There's like masked people who are helping Nakano and Saito too.
Yeah.
Chair shots to one of them. Nakano pile driver to Yamazaki. A beautiful gut wrench suplex twice. And both times, Yamazaki bridges out of pins. A very common theme. Yamazaki never kicks out. She just bridges up.
Yeah. And the entire time I'm thinking, oh, so that's where Manami Toyota got it from.
Yes. Dive to the outside by Tatano, but it misses. Comes in. Bridging suplex to Nakano. The Jumping Bomb Angels win the match and the titles.
It was a high bridging German suplex. Like, that was insane. She did, like, it wasn't a rainbow. It was like a freaking, like, it was like the steepest roller coasters. You know how they're like the world's tallest ones? They're always like that, pretty much.
I'm so thankful that they've put like POV shots of roller coasters now on like YouTube. Because now I can like see what it's like and be like, cool, I'm never doing it. I have no interest.
I do. I love roller coasters. My like one something that really upsets me is that I don't really have anyone in my life that's like as into it as I am. Because like you don't want to do it alone. But then hey, guys, you want to ride the really big, fast thing? And everyone's just like, yeah, I'm good.
I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people who, I don't know. Life is terrifying enough. I don't need the artificial fear.
Like, I'm not a thrill seeker by any means. Like, I will never go bungee jumping.
You're not Chris Jericho or Lance Storm. You're not a thrill seeker.
Bungee jumping's where I like draw the line. But like, I'd go skydiving if the group wants to go. I wouldn't do it like me. It's my personal goal to go skydiving. But if like the homies go, hey, you want to go
jumping
skydiving?
Out of a fucking plane?
Right, first off, I'm only doing it if I'm attached to some dude who's an expert and is going to do it for me.
Yeah,
only way
guy,
I'm doing it.
Some guy named Cliff.
Yeah, some guy named Cliff or like Axel. You know what I mean? Like.
All right. Let's talk about the mystery match. So, Javier picked the matches this week, right? And I go on and I look at it. We've this wonderful little sheet that keeps track of all the matches and all the people we've covered. And there is this note. For this next match, and it's, of course, the Jumping Bomb Angels against Dump Matsumoto and Peggy Lee. And then there's a note beside saying, I don't know when or where or why. This match is not real aside from this video.
It's true.
If you check ProFightDB, this match does not exist.
It doesn't exist. It's nowhere to be found.
It's clearly.
I went on all of their pages. I tried searching this. I even freaking searched up the company. Nowhere. It's nowhere to be found.
This same era of All Japan Women's Wrestling, I think it might be before our first match, but like it's right in the same ballpark. Like it's right around this time based on like all like the ring looks similar. Like it all looks the same.
Yeah. I know that Dump Matsumoto had like this. She was on in a team with Bull Nakano to face the Jumping Bomb Angels. That's a match I wanted to put in there, but yeah. I couldn't really find a full match of, so I couldn't use it, sadly. So it might have been like just after that, but before the Bull Nakano Condor Saito match. I don't know. All I know is I found it. I didn't know where to put it. I'd already seen the first match by this point, so I'm like, well, because everything revolves around me and what I want, I'm going to put it at number two.
And now you all get to hear about this mystery match. Again, if you're watching the match, Yamazaki is in blue and Tatano is in red.
Yes.
Easy way to identify for a first-time viewer.
Dump is the brick shithouse of a woman.
Dump is the coolest son of a bitch, because during the entrances, you'll see leather jacket and mirror shades. That's Dump Matsumoto.
And she's freaking huge. Like, she has biceps bigger than my head.
Dump Matsumoto is listed 5'4", 201.
That's insane. That is an insane build. And then Peggy Lee just looks like someone that's named Peggy Lee.
Yes. Also, you know how cool you have to be to pull off the name Dump? And, like, people just are like, yeah, that's scary. Like, instead of assuming that you, like, dookied in your pants. Like, to be named Dump? Dump. That's outstanding. And she carries it. She does. She does a great job. Did I break you by saying the word dookie? All right, that's good. Don't worry, I'll carry
this. I'm a child.
So, the weird thing about this match, it's a fever dream, because one, it doesn't exist, and two, the referee is actively working against the Jumping Bomb Angels.
Okay, it's not even like actively working against. This is a 3-on-2 match. The referee is like beating the shit out of the Jumping Bomb Angels.
So early on, there's a sunset flip by Yamazaki. Matsumoto kicks out immediately. Peggy Lee with a full Nelson lock, like a master lock, locked in. The ref then locks in a full Nelson on Yamazaki, dodges, and the ref gets drop kicked.
Which is so funny. Yamazaki gets hit with some stick. It looks like a pipe.
Yeah.
But it's not very thick, so I didn't think it was a pipe. It honestly kind of looks like a pointer stick that like...
It's a pencil.
Not even just like a literally like a pointer stick that like teachers used to use, or like a
conductor stick, yeah,
like a yeah, like or like a sergeant does, like walks around with, like oh
yeah. So yeah, clocks Yamazaki. The ref openly choking Yamazaki too.
Yeah, openly.
Another person comes to the ring, not Peggy Lee or Matsumoto, holds her while Matsumoto clubs her with the little pipe.
Yeah.
It's the ref breaks up submissions by Yamazaki. Tatano interrupts, and Matsumoto locks in a figure four, which is cool.
This is like a gang beatdown.
To the point where, like, did you see? So there's a point. Matsumoto is clubbing Tatano and Yamazaki. And then did you see what she was doing to their faces?
No.
She has like an orange or a lemon and is like rubbing it in their
eyes. That's what that was?
Yeah, it was.
Oh my God. I was like, unidentified. I couldn't figure out what citrus. It was. You know what it honestly looked like? It looked like the little blender thing that's used in makeup. That looks
beauty blender.
Like a circular thing that you just go like that with or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see one all the time. I don't know how it's used.
We get random statistics about the podcast, and we know that about like, I think it's like 15% of our listeners are female, which is cool.
Shout out to every single one of you.
Shout out to all of you. You're very cool. If you have men in your life, bring them a beauty blender and ask them what they think it is. And report back to us with the results, because I'm sure it's
first
funny.
First time I saw my girlfriend's, I thought it was a beanbag. Like one of those little beanbags.
Like that, it was like a stress ball.
Yeah, I thought it was like a stress ball, but like a beanie kind of one that, you know, when you hit it and it makes the noise, like you would use it for juggling.
Oh my God, Yamazaki, after getting, you know, lemoned in the face, goes to ringside and picks up a mic, and I can only assume starts talking shit.
Yeah, there's literally no other like thing that she
To be able to speak Japanese to know that she is talking that shit right now.
Yamazaki starts beating the fuck out of a ref who's just ringside wearing red pants.
kicking his ass.
Like, I, at this point, I kind of thought it was a shoot. I'm not even going to lie to you.
Pile driver by Yamazaki. Titano breaks it up and then, like, dives on the ref to break it up, kicks her. We get some beautiful moves, like double crossbody or diving crossbody by Yamazaki, a double dropkick by the Jumping Bomb Angels, a double clothesline.
Bridging German with very deliberate slow count.
The slowest count in history. Like, the sloth from the DMV in Zootopia. Like that
or
guy.
Like what Nick Patrick was supposed to do at Starrcade 97.
Correct. Double dropkick by Yamazaki to both Matsumoto and the ref, because like we said, this is a like 4-on-2 at this point.
More like they, 5. Apparently there's brawl, red pants outside.
They brawl through ringside, and the ref just calls for the bell and just awards the match to Peggy Lee and Matsumoto.
Yeah, and then some dude hops on the mic and like probably overturns it. I don't know. I don't speak Japanese, but...
I just wrote that this was a fever dream. I don't know if this is real. This feels like a nightmare that wrestlers would have, where it's like you go to have the match and the ref like turns on you and people are like squeezing lemons in your eyes. Like, what?
I think this is how Hogan lost the title once.
Well, he'd tell you that story, and it was in front of 300,000 screaming Hulkamaniacs, brother.
Yeah, in like fucking New Hampshire.
Unnecessary detail, but I love it. We're gonna take a break. When we get back, we have one more match in All Japan Women's Wrestling before we head to the WWF. Back from the break, the Jumping Bomb Angels are going against the Crush Gals, Shigusa Nagayo and the Lioness Asuka. All Japan Women's Wrestling, September 14th, 1987. Some of you out there are going, "Ooh, Asuka." Obviously not that one. This is 1987. Yeah. This is where
Lioness Asuka is incredible, though.
This is where Kana, who is what we now know as Asuka, got her namesake for WWE from.
Yes. And yeah, if you watch this match, you will see very much that she was 1,000,000% a Crush Gals mark.
Yes.
Half of Asuka's moonset was used in the first like 5 minutes of this match.
I do love when you are able to connect the eras that way. Like, I was listening today to a podcast, and apparently, Bijan Robinson, the like amazing running back for the Falcons.
You were listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, weren't you?
I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast. Apparently, he watches Barry Sanders highlights every day.
Yeah.
And I believe it because you can see part of that in his game. He's like, that's exactly what I'm modeling it after. And Asuka just straight up was a fan of the Crush Gals and was like, yeah, I'm just going to do that.
You know what I found out when I started doing the research for this? The Crush Gals are probably like the second or third most popular like wrestling personality in the world, like ever.
It's like
The Rock, and then what, like Ric Flair, maybe
depending on
then
the age.
And then it's the Crush Gals. Like in Japan, they were rock stars.
I believe
like
it.
Literally, like what we would consider to be like crossover megastars, like Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah.
That's what the Crush Gals would have been in Japan at that time. And their run was not that long.
And we mentioned in match one that the Jumping Bomb Angels win the tag titles. The Crush Gals were actually the team who ended their title reign after only 2 months. So they only won them, had them for 2 months, I believe. That, you know, at least in that reign.
It's tough to beat Asuka.
It's true. I also learned this fun fact. You'll notice, especially in this match, that all of the gear that each competitor is wearing looks a lot like swimsuits. Like, they pretty much look like full body swimsuits, like for like you'd
kinda
use for competitive swimming. It's because at the time, women's wrestling was not like there wasn't like women's amateur wrestling, and women's wrestling was still trying to get its footing, and you didn't really have access to, you know, tailors to make your own stuff. The closest thing to a singlet that a woman could find was a one-piece bathing suit. So most of them would just take a bathing suit and make adjustments to it. It makes a lot of logical sense when you think about it.
Especially when you look at the Crush Gals, like they just look like Olympic swimsuits.
That they just alternated colors. That's literally
it. Yeah, and they like wrote their name on the back.
Yes, that's it. Like it's... When you think about it, like, it's definitely a disadvantage for women's wrestling because, like, other guys, like, obviously you can just get someone to make you trunks. But if women's wrestling isn't as well known at the time, it's probably harder to find someone to tailor all your stuff for you.
And the worst part for them, at least, is that, like, you know, women's wrestling, especially in the 80s and into the early 90s, it was very, like, flamboyant. Like, it was all about colors and, like,
yeah,
really making yourself seem, like, lavish and just, like, very over the top. How the fuck do you make, like, just, like, a normal, like, thing, like clothing that you buy at, like, a freaking Macy's look like that? You know what I mean?
Speaking of, like, over the top. This match has an entire cheering section of people with pom-poms, and it's electric. I want cheerleaders at wrestling events, but like,
and just they were crowd. So well synchronized.
It was incredible. It's some of the most fast. Is this your recommendation of the week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So same here. This atmosphere is unlike a thing that I've experienced watching wrestling before. It's so interesting. And also the in-ring quality is out fucking standing.
Oh my god, the Crush Gals, like, no, the Jumping Bomb Angels are absolutely no slouches. We've giving them nothing but praise so far throughout the first couple matches that we've covered. In this match is when I realized there are levels to this shit, because the Crush Gals are freaking good, man.
What were some of the spots that stood out to you in the match?
At the beginning, first off, streamers galore. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that many streamers in a ring.
I will say, the
prime Young Bucks in Ring of Honor or like PWG, I've never seen streamers like that.
I still thought it was funny, like that one Japanese house show that WWE put on the network.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they did the streamers for Owens versus Balor.
Yeah.
And you can tell WWE was like, "How many streamers do we normally have? We don't know. Just get a lot and just fucking go to town." They like, how many are we supposed to have? We have no idea. Just throw them all.
Go to Party City. Get as many as you can.
I love Party City. What a great place.
Party City is a mess during this time of year.
Yeah. Happy spooky season to all who celebrate.
Yes, I can't wait. This is the first year where I'm going to hand out candy as an adult.
Oh my god, it's so fun.
I've never done it before.
You get to see so many cute little costumes. It's awesome, man.
Yeah, I'm just, then, you know, I'm getting ready
don't
for
have
it.
A lot of, if you don't have a lot of people come to see you, you get all the candy. It's awesome. It's great.
Oh, man. I just realized that would suck if we got nobody and I just bought like this big old thing of candy, because I don't eat candy like that.
That's right. Don't. Well, I mean, I'm assuming you're going to get candy and not chocolate because you hate chocolate.
I hate chocolate. So, well, we'll get some chocolate, but a lot of candy.
Early on in the match, there's a leg lock by Tateno. Big Samoan drop. Like, things are going well for the Jumping Bomb Angels early. They get a double drop kick in.
They have such good chemistry, too.
They do. And they're so smooth. And they're communicating without saying anything.
Yeah.
They know, like, they know what the next one's supposed to do.
I know that we, like, throw to sports a lot, but it's just because you and I
know sports
very well. So it's, like, easy. It's just an easy thing for us to reference. It's like Jokic and Jamal Murray. Like, they have this unspoken thing in the pick and roll. Mahomes and Kelsey, they just have this unspoken thing where they know where they are because they've been with each other for so long. It's like a reps thing. Like, they just know what to do with each other. They do. They know exactly what's happening. Every time, like, oh, you just hit that spot, I know exactly what to do to follow it. Come here, come tag me, let's go. It's just, it's incredible. They don't even need to, like, look at each other at this point.
There's a really great spot. I believe it's between Yamazaki and Asuka, where a backdrop is reversed into a sunset flip, which is something I have never seen before.
Yeah, that looks so good, though.
It was so smooth. And so good. Like I said, like, we're deep into doing this podcast. Like, we've been doing this. This is year four of the podcast. It's very hard to find spots I haven't seen before. And so any of these that pop up, I'm like, holy shit, I've never seen that before. But also, this is how I think both of our brains work. I start thinking, like, oh, who could do that spot now? The answer, probably lots of the roster could do it, but somebody should steal it.
We're looking at you, like, I don't know, Sky Blue or whatever, Roxanne Perez, someone who is typically doing, I just think about it more so because they like to do, like, Sunset, like the Code Red as their finisher, I think both of them have. So, like, you know, just do that, too.
It's a good finish.
It'd be cool. One of my favorite things, and so Lioness Asuka hits a belly to belly for a near fall at one point here. After the Bomb Angels have been wearing down Nagayo for the longest time. And then I didn't spoil this for you. earlier. So now I get to catch you by surprise here. I have a new finisher if I were to be a wrestler.
So the chair shot off the top rope is being retired.
It will be busted out for special. It's a special finisher.
Oh, so it's like your burning hammer.
It's my burning hammer.
Okay. What is your new everyday finish?
The fireman's carry into the armbar that fucking lioness, I think it's lioness, Asuka puts it on, not Nagayo. That is the sickest, coolest, most incredible thing I've ever seen in pro wrestling. Effortless. Just give me that arm. That arm now belongs to me. Like, I think Shinsuke Nakamura used to do it, and when he was in Japan, he'd bust it out every once in a while. It has never looked that good.
Well, never. I feel like his had, like, an extra, like, step to it. It was not the smooth, like, one to the other. He had, like, a little pause in the middle, but...
Because you still get the slam, but in the process of slamming the person, you're also wrenching on their fucking arm.
It's so good. So there is a spot where the Jumping Bomb Angels are in full control. Asuka comes in and eats repeated running knees to the face from Tateno. Gets a middle rope drop kick. And then they focus on the leg of Asuka. When she does get the tag, there's a snap German for a two by Shigusa. Yamazaki returns the favor, also hits one for a two. And this is where I realized, I'm like, this match has so much back and forth with no breaks. This match is one of the... Sometimes it's hard when we go back and watch things from the 80s because the pace doesn't match up with current wrestling. This match outpaces many current wrestling matches.
Yeah, like this is by no means like slog or like there's no... Honestly, I didn't notice that many like rest spots either. No, like, this is just balls to the wall the whole way through.
They wrench in any submission they actually do. Everything gets locked in. Like there's a Kimura earlier, locked the fuck in.
Like pretty much, I mean, there's a whole stretch during the middle-ish part of this match where they just start rocking Nagayo's leg over and over again, the Jumping Bomb Angels. Like they're just working on it. Like whether it's putting on a Boston Crab or a figure four or like that little Muda Lock into a bow and arrow type submission, like doing the back bump spots that Yamazaki loves to do. Like they are really going at it. At one point here, Tatano hits her running knees. Then she does the assisted missile drop kick where Yamazaki comes off the top. They do a heart attack for a near fall. That Nagayo is just taking so much punishment in the middle block of this match, and she just keeps kicking out. And then when Lioness Asuka comes in and the crowd pops like crazy, it's like... this is also, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it actually is, but I'm pretty sure this is a babyface match because both of them are getting massive reactions.
It's funny because underneath in the YouTube comments, there were, I think, two separate comments being like, I don't know who the heels were. And I think having watched it, like, I do think both are babyfaces, but just the Crush Gals are so over that they're just the more babyfaces. You know what I mean? Yeah. some other spots I want to talk about briefly. Doomsday Device by the Crush Gals for a two count. Chigurh hits a T-bone suplex at one point, which is fucking nice.
I love a T-bone.
The Jumping Bomb Angels get stereo drop kicks from the top rope and then a diving headbutt splash combo for the win. And my only note after the win was at least the refs weren't actively kicking their ass.
Yeah. This is... I'm just going to go out on a limb and say it. This is not only my recommendation for this week. I genuinely... like, and I mean this with all sincerity. Like, this is not just me being blind in the moment. I genuinely think that was a 5-star match.
I do too. I do
like,
too.
That was that is one of the greatest women's matches I have ever seen.
I'm looking back on our most recent episodes and I'm trying to think of when's the last time a match that I would recommend was as highly recommended as this match.
You got to go back a while.
No. Like there are some that were still like, there's at least one of the Takeshi Morishima matches that I would like is not at, it's not as good as this match, but I'd still recommend it just as highly. Before that, maybe one of the Midnight Express matches.
Not even that for me. Like this is the best match we've covered in a very, like it's gotta be like one of those three parts before.
I'm thinking ROH or Owen Hart. So like episodes 150 to 152.
Yeah, like what is that? September? Or not September. February?
30 weeks ago.
Yeah, like we got to go back to the beginning of this year pretty much. Or like deep into last year. because, man, it is, it's a beauty. We've called it a beauty.
Let's talk about their switch to the WWF. Mid-1987, they joined the World Wrestling Federation, and now that's where we go with Survivor Series 1987. We have a Survivor Series traditional elimination match. This is a match where you will get to see just how far ahead the Jumping Bomb Angels are compared to everyone in Western wrestling.
God,
there's one woman in this match who I think does a good job of keeping up. I want to see if we have the same note about that. It is the Jumping Bomb Angels, Velvet McIntyre, Rockin' Robin, and the Fabulous Moolah versus the Glamour Gals, Sensational Sherry, Dawn Marie, not that one, and Donna Cristinello.
This Dawn Marie looks absolutely nothing like our Dawn Marie, let me tell you.
The Glamour Gals are Junie Martin and Leilani Kai. They're the women's tag team champions at the time. The Jumping
Bomb
Angels.
So that everyone knows. The Glamour Gals are literally, aside from this match, the only opponents that the Jumping Bomb Angels had in their entire run in the WWF.
It's very weird. Jumping Bomb Angels are just announced as being from Japan. They get a big response during their intro, and then when Moolah gets announced, she gets booed. It's like they knew.
As she should.
It's like they knew. Survivor Series matches kind of suck, right? We're in agreement on that. That's not a hot take.
It depends on the match. I think that
there are some that are good, but
the first most recent brand split one was good, where it's like the Shield, the Rollins and like what was it? It was like Bray Wyatt, Orton, Shane, Ambrose and Styles versus
and then Jericho, Owens,
Roman,
Strowman.
And Strowman.
Yeah.
That match was great. I really enjoyed the match.
But on the whole,
undercard guys, usually. Yeah. Like mid and undercard guys, like not really the focus. And then there's always a couple of like fringe main eventers or guys who are just not in the main event story right now that are in there. And those are the ones that end up getting like the winning falls. And you're just like, okay. Like, there's a lot of great Randy Orton performances in these matches, but the matches themselves are just, like, not great. They're just
so recently, I was on the road for work, and I wanted to throw on an old wrestling thing, so I picked an old Survivor Series, and I wouldn't say super old, but I watched the first half of Survivor Series 2000, mainly because I was like, mid-card's fun back in the day, like, Attitude Era, mid-card, whatever. Oh, man. Like, so many good work. Like, there's some good workers in this match that I'm about to talk about. The Radicals versus Billy Gunn, K-Quick, Road Dogg, and China. So, in that match, you know, Dickhead's a good worker. Malenko's Malenko. Eddie's Eddie. You know, Billy Gunn is fine at what he does. He's in the ring. He's pretty good.
God, it's me, Billy.
I was watching and like, man, the action is too... It kind of sucks. It kind of sucks. It's just like a little bit. It kind of sucks. You know who stood out in that match though? K-Quick, aka R-Truth. He looked fucking fantastic.
I will say when they main event with a Survivor Series match, like tag match, that's when they're good.
Difference. Yeah, that's the difference.
That's when they're good. Because the Team Cena versus a Team Authority one was really good.
Shout out to Kane versus Chris Jericho, the match that happened because of spilt coffee. All right, let's rapid fire some of these eliminations because this match is pretty bad.
Yeah.
First elimination is Velvet with a victory roll on Donna Cristinello.
Shout out, I guess.
Pour one out.
Shout out to her. She did her best. Rockin' Robin gets dragged to the corner, gets abused by the heels. Leilani Kai hits a terrible looking crossbody. I don't even know who ends up hitting the running crossbody to Dawn Marie to eliminate
Rockin' Robin.
Is it Rockin' Robin?
It is. And so the heels,
yeah, okay, there you go. Rockin' Robin eliminates her.
The heels go down 5-3 early, which is unheard of.
Yeah. It's when was the last time that you could think of it? Is it the Cena versus Team Authority one where like.
I think
Mark Henry goes down and then there's someone else goes down and then suddenly you're like, what just happened?
And then Big Show fucks it up for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dickhead.
So it's 5-3 for the baby faces. That's when the Jumping Mom Angels finally make their appearance in the ring. And they are, again, just twice as fast and 12 times as crisp as anyone in the ring. Yamazaki in, high knees. Tateno in, arm drag off the top rope. Pull Sherry into the ring. Elbow, double underhook suplex. She's just whooping ass. It's awesome. But then the faces do lose a member because Rockin' Robin gets isolated in the corner. A scoop slam from Sherry eliminates Rockin' Robin. So it's 4-3.
A scoop slam.
Scoop slam. Well, that's the thing, is everyone starts at like 30% health in a Survivor Series elimination match.
This is so freaking true. Like, remember when Gunther got eliminated like super quickly?
Yeah. Yep.
You remember that? Yeah. You remember when that happened?
It was bad. So we get back in. Jesse Ventura is on commentary, and he has a point that a half-baked idea. It's like me with the no DQ guns earlier. Like
Kevin Wilde.
One of these girls should shave their head, then they won't get pulled by their hair anymore.
You know, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. I think he may be saying this because he's actively balding at the same time.
But also, wouldn't it make more sense if they just wore like a cap instead?
Like a swim cap?
Yeah. I mean, they got the swimsuits already.
That's true. Moolah gets brought into the ring. Double clothesline by the Glamour Gals. Fabulous Moolah's eliminated. The world rejoices. Everything's great. So it's 3-on-3 again.
It's the worst double clothesline I've ever seen, by the way.
Yamazaki with a big right hand. The faces work over the legs of Judy Martin. Velvet puts on a crab and a surfboard. And that's where I was realizing Velvet McIntyre is the only person in this match who was keeping up with the Jumping Bomb Angels.
No, I think Sensational Sherry looked really good. She's the one okay. I thought you were going to go with.
No, I thought Velvet looked really good too. So you know what? Sherry was all right too. So Sherry was very good. And they were the feud for the women's title at the time. So that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. She puts on a bow and arrow, like you mentioned. Leilani Kai hits a butterfly suplex. And then the bell rings, even though there was a near fall.
Yeah, and commentary has to immediately be like, oh, there was no elimination. Everything's good because that would have eliminated.
Waving his hands.
Yeah, that would have eliminated a Jumping Bomb Angel, and we can't have that.
Oop. Velvet McIntyre does a big swing. Shout out to Claudio Castagnoli.
I loved it.
She only does it for like 4 or 5 rotations.
I think she gets to 5 rotations, and I'm like, all right, this is still cool. She does another victory roll, pins Sherry, and that's what's going to lead to their kind of title feud because she got a pinfall over the women's champion. The easiest way to book title feuds in December in WWE is to have your champion be in a Survivor Series match and get pinned by somebody, and then you have a one-off match based on that, and that's your...
just the G1. That's basically what they do.
Yeah, that's your Armageddon feud. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it is. It's like I said, the G1. I mean, No, the champion never wins the G1. So whoever pins the champion at any stage gets a title match.
Tateno's in, double underhook suplex, body scissors. Velvet gets tagged in again, even though she had just been hurt, like her back was hurting.
Yeah.
Leilani hits what actually was a surprisingly lit move, where she bounces Velvet off the ropes and hits an electric chair drop.
Yeah, it's like it's a slingshot electric chair is what I called it.
I was like, oh, I didn't expect that to be the move. So we end up, it's 2-2, and it's the Jumping Bomb Angels versus the Glamour Gals. Go figure.
Bum, bum, bum. Tatana hits a flying crossbody to Kai to eliminate her, like, almost immediately.
Yeah.
Scoop slam into a knee drop that I thought was really cool.
Very cool. Double backdrop. Jimmy Hart gets on the apron because he is the manager for the Glamour Gals. Gets drop kicked off the apron, and then Martin gets pinned. John Bomb Angels miles ahead.
Flying clothesline, I think it was.
Yeah, good times.
They are so incredibly fast.
We are going to take our last break. When we get back, we have one more match for the Jumping Bomb Angels versus, you guessed it, the Glamour Gals. Back from the break, as is always the custom when we have our matches about Japanese wrestling and that don't have English subtitles or translations, when it comes time for a promo, we are going to need to lean on a Japanese wrestling fan to help translate for us because we have a promo.
Well, thankfully, we had the commentator guy do it for us.
I don't know how much I trust him. But if we have any listeners who do speak Japanese who would like to translate this for us, that would be very cool. The promo is for their match at the Royal Rumble in 1988. And it's, of course, the Glamour Gals and the Jumbo Bomb Angels. The Glamour Gals...
Big surprise there.
Don't get to talk. Yes. I also realized I've been calling them Glamour Gals. They're actually the Glamour Girls. The Crush Gals were earlier. Gals and girls.
I had the same thing earlier in my notes. Yeah. And I had to go back through and like change all their names. Yeah. Jimmy Arnt says, diamonds are forever. And to have mink coats and diamonds and then the Glamour Girls flash their diamonds and stuff. Yeah. They have to keep the championships. And then it goes over to the Jumping Bomb Angels who say something in Japanese that, Evan, I don't know. You don't. Oh, my God. We have a superstar.
Yes, my cat has appeared. I forgot that he was in here while we were recording.
We have a star.
The Jimmy Hart is the only one who talks. The Glamour Girls don't actually get to talk, which is a lot. He says, gentlemen prefer blondes, diamonds, and forever. Jimmy's the only one who talks anything. And then Jumping Bomb Angels come in, and they cut their promo in Japanese. And what does the nerd in the control room say that they actually say?
Nerd in the control room.
He looks like a nerd.
He says that they said that they were excited to win the WWF tag team titles.
I mean, I would be too. Who doesn't want to win tag titles? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, Evan, when are we going to challenge for some tag titles?
Who do we get to challenge? Like other podcasters? Like I can't wrestle.
I think that we should challenge Big Bill and Ricky Starks.
Cool. Who are you taking in that?
Oh, you're taking Big Bill, buddy.
On my best day, I could take Stokely. That's it. On my best day.
No. You're taking Big Bill, because then you keep him distracted. I got Ricky.
All right, that works. You versus Ricky. the odds are not in your favor. All right, our last match, Royal Rumble 1988, 2 out of 3 falls match for the Women's Tag Team Championship. It's the Jumping Bomb Angels versus the Glamour Girls. Live from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Baby, the first ever Royal Rumble.
Is that the home of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander?
That is the home of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
I drove through there.
Yeah, through Hamilton. What a happening place. It's if you're wondering, if you would like a comparison, it's also called like the Steel City. So it's like our Pittsburgh.
I didn't see a lot of smog, though.
I don't know, better environmental protections? I don't know what to tell you.
So, wrestling.
Jumping Bomb Angels actually get an entrance, which is cool.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, a lot of these matches, their entrances were kind of cut off because like the clips just start right when the matches are about to start. Yeah,
but the Glamour Girls don't get an entrance because their entrance happens during a commercial, and that made me happy.
it's messed up.
Your champions don't get an entrance.
But the Jumping Bomb Angels, who are clearly the most popular act in that women's division, they do.
Very much so. Before we dive into the actual wrestling, Vince is on commentary. Let's talk about Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Him and
the reason why the stock's down?
Jesse Ventura is also on commentary, of course. And Jesse asks for the names of the Jumping Bomb Angels because up to this point, we're about like 5 minutes into the match, Vince has not referred to either Jumping Bomb Angel by name. He then says that he doesn't know their names and refers to them by the color of their gear.
Because he doesn't speak Japanese, he says.
He calls one pink and one red because that's the color of their gears. Yet, later in the match, he clearly does know who's who because he refers to them by their first names.
And you just like expect me to like believe that this is an individual that can properly book certain races?
That can properly book any, like just, I don't know. I don't, Vince McMahon.
Like, what are we doing here? What does Vincent Kennedy McMahon know about booking talent that does not look like Vincent Kennedy McMahon?
I will point you again to the story about Jim Ross having to show Vince McMahon that Asian pornography existed because he didn't understand the appeal of Gail Kim.
So the Jumping Bomb Angels hit dropkicks like immediately to both Glamour Girls. Yamazaki was going to hit like a pile driver. Like she had, I think it was Judy Martin. She had her up in the pile driver position and then like suplexed her.
Which she does twice in this match and is a
it's
weird
like just
spot.
Hit a pile driver.
but I kind of dig it. I don't know. It's just it's a weird thing to do, but I like it.
I respect it.
Leilani Kai comes in the ring. We get a running knee from Tateno. Yamazaki with a drop kick, series of forearms, double figure fours by the Jumping Bomb Angels. Yamazaki gets power bombed as she's pulled off the top rope.
Yes.
Wasn't expecting that. I was pleasantly surprised with the Glamour Girls in this match. I thought they were doing all right.
Well, Leilani Kai is a good worker.
Leilani Kai is a very good worker.
We've seen her once or twice on this podcast already. Judy Martin, I know nothing about.
We saw her in the Alundra Blaze episode.
Yes, WrestleMania.
And in the Wendi Richter episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then...
Honestly, you know what? We have covered a lot of a wide range of women's wrestling. Honestly, they're some of my favorite episodes to go do. So they you really should go listen are. To those. They're really fun.
Especially Manami Toyota. A lot of people go back and listen to our Manami Toyota episode, they but do. Like, go back and listen to the Manami Toyota episode. She's awesome.
Trying to think, you know, who else was a really fun episode that we did?
My goat,
Beth Phoenix, was a super fun episode.
Yes,
I really enjoyed that one. Awesome Kong was a good episode. Mickey James,
I really like the Michelle McCool episode.
Really like the Michelle McCool one. And honestly, shout out to the Alicia Fox episode. It was fun.
Alicia Fox.
Because we did that a lot. So our first fall is
backwards powerbomb, baby.
Backwards powerbomb by Kai.
I thought it might have been Judy Martin.
I think it was Judy Martin, actually. Yeah. And so the Glamour Girls go up one fall to nil. To Tenno and our next fall, great clotheslines, middle rope clothesline, crossbody. The Glamour Girls try to run the Jumping Bomb Angels into one another, but yes. The awareness, they stop. They then duck, and the Glamour Girls clothesline each other. And then is it just a roll-up that gets the Jumping Bomb Angels fall too?
Yes. It's a sunset flip pin.
Sunset flip pin, right. And then we come back from the commercial. And so I just need to talk about commercials for a second. We don't get to see the commercials, but I had the TV on while I was watching this. I was watching...
Did the Tron commercial come back up again?
I know. I was watching, I wish. I was watching Thursday Night Football on the background. And a Cars for Kids commercial came on.
Money, seven cars.
Stop it.
For kids.
Stop it. I had a visceral, like, reaction. And I didn't mean to. I just went, no! And I muted the TV. I didn't mean...
Donate your car today.
You've never been more of a heel in my eyes than right now. Like, that's the most despicable heel shit I've ever seen.
I've seen that commercial so many freaking times. I know it word for word.
It is a top two terrible commercial, and it's not two.
What is in contention?
Nothing. That's why it's not number two. It's number one.
You know what number one is? That Chef Boyardee commercials where the can like fell off the shelf and then like rolled all through the streets and stuff to get back into the house of the person at the store that dropped it. And then like the person just ends up with a free can of Chef Boyardee.
Chef Boyardee always had all those old WWF commercials, so they get a pass from me. They were not bad.
Right, I like the mini raviolis with the little meatballs.
My only problem with Chef Boyardee is if you actually go by the cooking instructions that they have on the can, 9 times out of 10, anything that isn't just like a plain noodle will be cold. Like, you need to double their cooking instructions or else it will be cold still.
Add an extra minute to that shit.
Nothing like absolutely like boiling sauce and somehow frozen ravioli. Also, the bowl you cook it, if you're microwaving it, the bowl will burn you. It's like 1,000 suns. And yet the ravioli inside is fucking frozen.
You've got to like get one of those torches that you would use for creme brulee, but you just put it on the ravioli.
I know there's someone out there who's like, well, Evan, if you just cook it this way. I know. Okay. But microwaves, they were invented for a reason. And the reason was to, I don't know, give us radiation poisoning. But also,
like, if you're cooking Chef Boyardee on the stove, something is wrong with you.
Yeah. If you're cooking Chef Boyardee on the stove, make pasta. Yeah, you have a stove.
Get pasta.
You have a stove. Make pasta.
You're not 9 years old. Go get pasta.
Just, you know, boil the water. Put fresh noodles in. You don't need to make the sauce. Just get a can of sauce. You can get
cook some ragu or rouse.
Some ragu. Yeah, some prego. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah. Also, it doesn't even have to be marinara. Could be like an Alfredo. A little bit of pesto. A little
pesto, yeah. What's your like favorite struggle meal? I know we're distracted from the Jumping Bomb Angels Glamour Girls, but...
Oh, my God. Actually, so it's not like the normal ramen. Like, I don't even know what brand it is. The ramen noodles, you know, the ones that come in the little squares. Yeah. They're like an orange packet. It's not necessarily that one. I get this other one that's like... It's more of like a long rectangle. They look like pretty much what a spaghetti packet looks like, but it's ramen. I do that. Make one thing of it. And then I get this like Costco like grilled chicken. I just stick in the air fryer for like 5 minutes. And then I put that together. I have this like sweet chili sauce that I bought. I don't know where. Probably Stop and Shop. And I like pour it on there, mix it together. Boom. It takes like 5 minutes. As long as the chicken is in the air fryer, pretty much is the entire time it takes.
I'm going even more struggle old school. Hot dogs with the white bread bun. It's different.
I was never a big hot dog guy.
Oh my God. I was 94% hot dog at one point in my life. All right.
You love a glizzy.
I do. I do love it. So to this day. Fun fact, went to a Blue Jays game this summer, and every Tuesday home game, they do loony dogs. So what a loony dog? For those who don't know, a loony is a dollar coin in Canada.
I forgot about that.
And so you can
go. You meant like literally like the Looney Tunes.
You will walk up and say, here's a $10 bill. Give me 10 hot dogs. And they're smaller hot. Like they're not the full size. So like
can I get a toonie?
Yeah. So you get 2 hot dogs. So I was there and obviously I ate 8 hot dogs. Obviously.
Is that the one where you went with your brother?
Yeah, my little brothers both had like 3 each, and then I had 8. You know, trying to set an example.
How big are the hot dogs?
No, they're like this big. You know?
Oh, no. Are they like this big, like a freaking little mini hot dog, or are they like a normal hot dog size?
Take your hot dog that you get in the store, right? Like the generic brand hot dogs, right? 3/4 of the size of that.
That's still pretty big.
Oh, I mean, it's all
8 of those, man.
I know. It was over the course of the game.
Chestnut. Those games are 2 hours nowadays.
Okay, let me also say this. I know we're so distracted, but it's fine. During one of the like between innings, right? They had a hot dog eating contest, and they had 2 guys on the screen doing, and they had like the hot dogs in front of them. You had 60 seconds to finish as many hot dogs as you could. How many do you think these guys finished? Each.
3.
Neither one finished a single hot dog. They were taking their sweet time. People booed for good reason.
What?
They were just like, hum, num, num. Like, there was no urgency. There was no passion. Man, there was no vision.
Like, at some point, are they next to each other?
Yes.
Like, at some point, I'm just, like, looking at the guy, and I'm like, if I just finish 1 hot dog, I win.
They were booed more than the Blue Jays, who were bad that game. All right.
Jesus. At least he made the playoffs.
There's a third fall here.
Yes, there is a third fall. Tandem running knees to Leilani Kai. Kai then uses, like, Tatano's hair to, like, drive her into the rope.
Yeah.
There's an double arm underhook. That's the one.
Yeah.
Suplex for a near fall. Yamazaki,
with a bridge. It's nice.
Yeah, with a bridge. Yamazaki just like drops Kai on her ass over and over again. It's kind
of
funny.
It was if you didn't do the sit out part of the Bubba Bomb.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Tatano does a flying knee drop for a near fall. Yamazaki misses a middle rope senton. Flying clothesline for near fall, and then we get to the finish, Evan.
Jumping Bomb Angels up top, double drop kick to Judy Martin, pinfall, and they win. How long do you think the Glamour Girls title reign was before it was ended by the Jumping Bomb Angels?
Well, it's over a year.
Give me your best guess in days.
If it's over a year, I'm going to assume they had it for a good stretch there. So, like, we'll go 562 days.
This ended the Glamour Girls' reign at 906 days, having won them on August 1st, 1985, from the team of Desiree Peterson and Velvet McIntyre. They would then win them back from the Jumbo Bomb Angels on June 8th, 1988, capping their reign as 136 days. Also, they won the titles back via countout. Yeah.
Yeah, that's enough on that.
And then so on Valentine's
Day, the Jumping Bomb Angels were only there for a year.
Valentine's Day 1989, the tag titles were deactivated officially.
Yeah, because they freaking lost them in Japan.
And they didn't know what to do with the division otherwise. I had a lot of fun going back and looking at the career of the Jumping Bomb Angels. They were, again, ahead of their time. What fun baby faces to cheer for.
Yeah, like just genuinely exciting. Honestly, like both of them, because they both had like similar flares far as like they both had similar aura, but they went about it in different ways.
Who was your favorite Jumping Bomb Angel?
I like Titano. I just love the good Yamazaki. Running knee.
Okay, so again, the balance. This is great.
I love a good running knee. But like, no, they both kind of reminded me of like, they both were like two quarters or three fourths of the way three fourths of the way to like Manami Toyota. Like they were just really excited. They have kind of similar movesets there. You could see that Manami took a lot of inspiration from them as well. And she just kind of like evolved. She's like the evolutionary Jumping Bomb Angel. I love that style of wrestling. So they both just really excited me. And if people will probably think about like wrestling nowadays. And if you're like a real big Jamie Hayter fan or something like that, like you're going to like watch this and be like, oh, it's a lot of like running knees and drop kicks and like cross bodies and stuff. What's so excited about that? You know, but like just seeing women's wrestling in the mid to late 80s be that exciting and to just do this much. And then growing up in the era of women's wrestling that we both grew up in, where it was not that.
They didn't get time or opportunity. And it just, even if they did, it wasn't like
they barely got clothes.
That's also true. These matches, specifically the match against the Crush Gals, I also think that opening match against Bull Nakano and Kondo Saito, you could watch them today as a wrestler and gain things from it. And notice I didn't say as a women's wrestler. You can watch this as anybody who wants to do tag wrestling, and you will get tag psychology. You will get double team maneuvers to use. You will just learn about pace. I think that's the big thing.
Learn the importance of chemistry, because I think that's what was really big.
A word to describe the Jumping Bomb Angels, it was pace. Constant, consistent. They were always up. It's like any good soccer player who just never loses that stamina through the whole game. So like first minute, 90th minute, they're still running around the same speed. That's such a game changer. Didn't matter how deep in the match you were, Jumping Bomb Angels. Well, I mean, that's true, because the ones who don't do it are the most noticeable. When you don't have pace in soccer, it's like, what's wrong with you?
It's like if you don't have the fitness in soccer, like I don't know what to tell you. Like everyone's just running out here, brother.
Meanwhile, here I was fitness, ate hot dogs into my mouth. It was a really good time. Of course, the Crush Gals is the recommendation this week.
Yeah.
What a wonderful match.
What a wonderful life.
What a wonderful world. Louis Armstrong, you should follow us on social media at Crossbody of Work on Instagram and Twitter. We are on the road to continuous to build. There's lots of extra content for you. That's the best way to sell it. We do lots of cool reels. We post lots of fun things. You can connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. You can shoot us DMs. They're always open at Crossbody of Work. We just are thrilled that people continue to listen and we want to connect with you. So hit us up on those. If you're already watching on YouTube, hello. You saw my cat earlier. Wasn't that cool? Also,
show you mine, but she's dead asleep over there.
You should subscribe on YouTube if you aren't already. There's lots of extra content here too. Every week we're doing extra bonus videos. We recently did a revisited series on Randy Savage. We recently did another one of our Take a Card, Make a Card episodes, which is a really fun gimmick. We've had wrestler interviews. We interviewed Nick Sullivan. He was awesome. And also, if you are watching, hit like on all those videos. It helps us out tremendously. Fullpressshop.com. Cop the merch. Support the boys. Help us out. Javier's got the Fresh Prince t-shirt on. Hopefully coming up with some more merch designs ahead of WrestleMania weekend. So we'll have to see what those look like.
Perhaps.
Fullpresswrestling.com for all the matches. Of course, as usual, you can follow Javier wherever he tells you right now.
I forgot to make the sign, so it's just going to be at JMello Sports.
On the Twitter machine.
On the Twitter machine.
I'm also on the Twitter machine, at It's Evan Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. Next week, we dive in to a lucha legend, somebody who was instrumental in ECW, WCW, and did have a run in WWE, but it wasn't nearly as good.
I'll talk about that.
We're going to talk about it, unfortunately, but we are going to cover the career of Juventud Guerrera. We're talking about the Juice.
Hoovy!
I have always had a soft spot for Hoovy. He was one of the luchadors that I first looked at, and I was like, you're cool. I can't describe what it is, but you're very cool, and I want to watch every match you have.
He had a match in AEW.
He did, which is impossible to find. AEW is good at keeping their shit under wraps.
They're not good at keeping their pay-per-views under wraps. I can always find like pay-per-view matches on Dailymotion.
But Dynamite matches, hard to find.
Impossible.
Yeah, impossible. No. Dynamite just goes into the ether after. So yes, he was a Labor of Jericho. Was that what that was called? Yeah. It was like the Labors of Jericho or the Trials of Jericho. It was one of those.
I don't know if it was that or if it was in the Moxley, like the second Moxley feud when he was Lionheart back.
No, he was one of the trials for Jericho to get through to. Yeah, because I tried to find
it. To get to Max. Okay. Yeah,
to get to Max. Yeah. Juventud Guerrera is next week. And then the week after is Halloween. We have a very special episode for Halloween. We're not going to tell you what it is yet, but that's the spoiler. It's very exciting. I was considering doing a Mordecai episode. It's not Mordecai.
There's not enough matches for Mordecai, sadly.
Well, we do Kevin Thorne too, and we talk about vampires.
There aren't enough matches for Mordecai.
There should have been more. It should have been me. Dolph Ziggler meme right here. Thank you for listening this week as we dove into the career of the Jumping Bomb Angels. It's time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast. Javier, any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, it's actually Life Advice for Javier. Evan, I am in probably amidst of a transition in my career.
Okay.
And I know that you have transitioned away from multiple jobs at this point because you are in your 30s, and that's just what kind of happens when you're in your 30s.
Hey, you old son of a bitch, you've moved.
You've gone other places.
What is your advice request?
When you're about to leave a job that you have no hard feelings for and your boss likes you, how do you go about the like 2 weeks notice thing?
I'm always a big face-to-face person with managers for 2 weeks notice.
Okay, what if your boss is in Florida?
Well, then virtual is still in terms of the ranking, it's face-to-face, it's video call, then it's phone call, then it's an email. And then on the bottom is writing it on a cake, delivering it to them, and never speaking to them again. So you're want to go with like the Zoom video call route, telling them like, hey, you know, my situation has changed. I found another opportunity, giving you my 2 weeks notice. You know, like I'd still like to be able to secure a positive reference from you in the future if that's something that you're comfortable doing. Make sure you ask people for a positive reference, not just a reference.
Yes.
Because some people will be like, I'll give you a reference and it's going to suck. So make sure you secure that positive reference. Say that you have no hard feelings, that you'll, if you know anyone, you will recommend them for positions in the company. Like, that's always a positive thing to do. I know that's what I talked about in my last job. I had an exit interview, and they asked me a little bit about the company. I said, here's all the things I think you're doing really well. I will keep my eye out for people that I know that are looking for jobs. You were such a great company. I will gladly try to send you really talented people because you're really great. So those are my recommendations. If you want to do something nice, you like, if you've got an office, like bring in treats in your last week.
I don't want to go back to the office.
All right. You don't actually work in the office. Yeah. But
I haven't been there in months.
That's advice for those who are in an office pretty consistently. Like bring in a nice little thing, donuts on the last day or whatever. People will really appreciate it. And then you have a really, even if, you know, people are bummed that you're leaving, at least it's a really positive note to end on. So
they're going to be like, shit, who's going to do all that now?
Yeah, and you know what? People need to be prepared for the fact that, you know, sometimes you lose staff. That's the way it goes. So it's all part of the world we live in. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the life advice this week.
Yes, that's life advice this week. Javier, life advice for Javier has been sponsored by Evan.
That's right. It's me. I'm the sponsor now. Look at me. So, hey, it's been 10 years since Captain Phillips got released. There's a fun fact.
Yeah, I heard that on your other podcast.
Go follow my other podcast, Pop Capsule Podcast. All right, thanks so much for joining us. We're back next week. We'll talk about Juventud Guerrera. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.